I bet you didn't have Greenland on your bingo card of geopolitical hotspots for 2026. But if you did, you'd be winning right now.
President Trump renewing his call for the U.S. to acquire Greenland.
We need Greenland for national security, so we're going to see what happens.
Let me put it in words you might understand. Mr. Trump, f*** off.
I'm helping Europe, I'm helping NATO, and until the last few days when I told them about Iceland, they loved me.
A new threat from President Trump and the standoff over Greenland. The president says he'll impose a 10% tariff on Denmark and seven other European nations opposed to his takeover plans.
We have to respect people's right for self-determination. And the Greenlandic people have been very clear. They don't want to become Americans.
They're not there for us on Iceland, that I can tell you.
The poll found that only about one quarter of U.S. adults approve of the way Trump is handling this issue.
We're negotiating right now for Greenland.
Do you believe that President Trump still wants to own Greenland?
Unfortunately, I think the desire is the same.
I mean, our stock market took the first dip yesterday because of Iceland. So Iceland's already cost us a lot of money.
Yes, against all odds, Greenland,
Iceland,
has somehow become a bone of geopolitical contention, with Venezuela, Panama, and Cuba not far behind. We're told that this is about the mad scramble for resources in the Arctic, and there may be some truth to that, but it's not the whole truth. So what is this brouhaha over Greenland really about? Let's roll up our sleeves and find out.
You're listening to The Corbett Report.
Welcome back, friends. Welcome back to another edition of The Corbett Report podcast. I'm your host, James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, coming to you, as always, from the sunny climes of Western Japan here in February of 2026 with episode 492 of The Corbett Report podcast. What's Greenland really about? So, let's answer the question. And like so many other questions of this ilk, this is a question that has a multifaceted answer. Let's think of it like an onion. And in order to really get to the core and understand that onion on the inside, we have to peel back the layers. Because there are many layers to this answer. Let's start with the topmost layer, the one that you will get in the propagandistic purveyors of establishment discourse, like, for example, the BBC, who deigned to answer this question in a handy-dandy little explainer that they came up with last month. Why does Trump want Greenland, and what could it mean for NATO and the EU? So let's see what the propagandists at the Big Brother Corporation have to say about this. And after some waffling, helpfully explaining where is Greenland and why is it important to Trump, they finally get to something approaching the heart of the matter or the heart of their explanation, or as close as we're going to get, where they say, he, Trump, has repeatedly described the threat he perceives from Russia and China in the region, as in the Arctic. In one Truth Social post, he wrote, NATO has been telling Denmark for 20 years that you have to get the Russian threat away from Greenland. Unfortunately, Denmark has been unable to do anything about it. Now it is time, and it will be done. In a text message to Norway's Prime Minister, Jonas Gahr Støre, Trump also said that he no longer felt obliged to focus on peace after not being awarded the 2025 Nobel Peace Prize. Yada, yada. What has Trump said about his Greenland plans? And what have Denmark and other NATO allies said about Greenland's future? Why does Denmark control Greenland? Etc., etc. I guess if you want the bare bones Wikipedia style explanation, you can turn to the propagandists at the BBC. And I suppose it does at least offer us one window into the answer of this question. For a slightly more nuanced take on this, we could turn to Zero Hedge, who brings us Why Greenland is at the Center of a Shifting Global Order, where they talk about some of these ideas, the strategic, geostrategic importance of Greenland in its place there in the Arctic. It says here, situated at the gateway to the Atlantic and Arctic oceans, Greenland has become central to U.S. homeland defense. That assessment is reflected in the new U.S. National Defense Strategy released on January 23rd. It identifies Greenland as a key terrain along with the Panama Canal and the Gulf of America. Well, interesting. Yes, certainly. And you can go and continue reading this article in your own time, if you so desire. Ultimately, it gets to the point that essentially this is a battle between the U.S. and China, primarily, or China-Russia, for geostrategic dominance of the Arctic. And that does make sense, because ultimately this is not coming from Zero Hedge. This is coming from the Epoch Times. So take the anti-China baiting in this article for what it's worth. But at the very least, it does offer us something of an explanation and a link to the aforesaid 2026 National Defense Strategy produced by the Department of War. And if you want some light bedtime reading that will put you to sleep almost instantly, here you go, guys. Here is the 2026 National Defense Strategy. And yeah, let's just do a Command F search for Greenland. And yeah, we see Panama Canal and Greenland being mentioned there. We see, for example, we will guarantee U.S. military and commercial access to key terrain, especially the Panama Canal, Gulf of America, and Greenland, etc., etc. Yes, there are a number of references to Greenland in this document. So yes, this is an aspect of what is happening, and it does make a certain degree of sense. There is a geostrategic importance to Greenland as the gateway to the Arctic, as it were, or gateway from the Arctic, and one that will be of increasing concern as we step into the 21st century and the opening of a new northern corridor. And there are aspects of this, again, that do make sense, but it doesn't quite go all the way towards explaining why now Greenland is becoming of such military importance, because, as Task and Purpose helpfully explain in an article, a brief history of the U.S. military's presence in Greenland that points out the U.S. troops have long been based in Greenland. It talks about the U.S. military's modern relationship with Greenland began in April 1941, when the American government signed an agreement with Danish ambassador to the United States, Henrik Kaufmann, that allowed the U.S. military to establish bases on the island. It talks about after Denmark rejected a U.S. offer in 1946 to buy Greenland for $100 million, both countries struck an agreement in 1951 that granted the U.S. military access to the island. The U.S. military had more than a dozen bases in Greenland, along with thousands of troops during the Cold War, although relations were strained between Denmark and the United States when, in 1968, an American B-52 bomber armed with four nuclear weapons crashed in Greenland, spreading radioactive debris. The crash also revealed that the United States had been, shock, gasp, horror, who would have guessed, violating Denmark's 1957 policy against having any nuclear weapons in the country or its territories. Not a surprising story there, but then it goes on to talk about the remaining military, U.S. military installation that is currently operating on Greenland, the Pituffik Space Base, which contains an early warning radar, which is vital to the U.S. military's ability to keep an eye on Russia's nuclear forces. So there is an already existing military agreement between the U.S. and Denmark. U.S. military is actively operating one base there. They certainly have military access to the Arctic already. So already we're starting to see cracks forming in this narrative. But if you really want to steel man the idea that this is all about the geopolitical struggle between U.S. and China/Russia, you could turn to an analyst like Valina Chakarova, who has been writing a series of articles over the past couple of years, actually, but certainly in this year, about the new Cold War in the Arctic, where she says Russia has significantly expanded its Arctic military posture compared to the post-Cold War low point over the last years, particularly through northern fleet infrastructure, bastion defense, and undersea capabilities. Meanwhile, China does not have a verified naval or submarine presence in the GIUK, but its Arctic role is expanding through economic, scientific, and institutional engagement alongside Russia. The Northern Sea Route is being systematically developed by Moscow with Chinese cooperation, officially commercial, but structurally dual use in an increasingly militarized Arctic theater. And she says Greenland is not encircled, but the High North remains a real exposure and will be key strategic theater in the new Cold War, with the Dragon Bear risk vector being asymmetric, long-term, and primarily Russian, while China shapes the enabling environment geoeconomically and indirectly geopolitically through the militarization of the Indo-Pacific region. She goes on to write about the Northern Sea Route, aka China's Polar Silk Road, and talks about the shipping routes that are already operating and that are opening up in the Arctic that will facilitate this scramble for Arctic positioning, of which obviously Greenland is very geostrategically situated to provide access to all of the Arctic shipping routes. So that is, there is certainly a case to be made for this aspect of what is happening right now. And you can follow the links of this in the show notes for today's episode at CorbettReport.com/Greenland for this article, for example, from Valina Chakarova, the Northern Corridor Doctrine, talking about Cold War 2.0, which is not a revival of 20th century ideological bipolarity. It is a systemic confrontation between two competing block building systems. On the one side, you have the United States and the Anglosphere, and on the other side, you have the Dragon Bear. What is that? It's the global modus operandi of strategic coordination between China and Russia, fusing China's economic and technological reach with Russia's military revisionist power and readiness for coercive escalation. And in this new Cold War, power is no longer measured primarily by territorial conquest or ideological appeal. It is measured by the ability to secure corridors, global supply chains, trade routes, commodities, and strategic technologies have fused with national security. And again, you can continue reading through this article, and there is a lot of information in here about this portion of the global chessboard and why it is such a strategic square and why there is obviously interest from the U.S. Anglosphere side as well as the Dragon Bear side, if that is how you want to frame it. And again, it's not simply military in interest here. As Chakarova points out, this Cold War 2.0 is not about territorial conquest per se. It is about securing supply chains, trade routes, commodities, strategic technologies. For example, you have no doubt heard about rare earths and the importance of rare earths in this day and age and the abundance of rare earths to be found, for example, in Greenland. And if you want to drill down on that topic, I will point not for the first time to an article that from the Gold and Geopolitics Substack called Weaponizing the Periodic Table that is voluminous, but definitely worth your time. And if you start reading through this, you'll start to see a very interesting picture that is very persuasively painted by the author of this article, who talks about, for example, in July 2023, China announced export licensing requirements for gallium and germanium. Who cares? What does that have to do with the price of tea in China? October 2023 brought graphite export controls. China produces over 90% of the world's processed graphite, the material that enables lithium-ion battery anodes, every electric vehicle, every grid-scale battery, every piece of consumer electronics. The West wants an energy transition? Beijing will decide the pace. September 15th, 2024 marked the implementation of antimony licensing requirements. Okay, all right. April 2025 introduced export licensing for 7 heavy rare earth elements: samarium, gadolinium, terbium, dysprosium, lutetium, scandium, and yttrium. And again, you could go through this just rare earth element after rare earth element after material and supply, cesium, and getting into tungsten and bismuth and all of these various elements that are being strategically controlled, increasingly so, by China and controlled through export controls that they have been using in this leveraged trade war between Beijing and Washington that's been off and on for several years now. And again, this is a very, very, very voluminous, documented, detailed case that is quite persuasive in showing that, yes, there are certainly, there is a rare earth element aspect to this Cold War 2.0 on the geopolitical chessboard, and that's surely part of what's going on with Greenland and why Greenland is suddenly becoming so important. But let's put some brakes on that narrative. At the very least, maybe it's not the all-encompassing explanation that some people might make it out to be. China's rare earth monopoly and why markets will break it, coming from the Daily Economy last month, where they talk about what are rare earth elements anyway? What does that mean? Rare earth elements are a group of 17 metals, mostly in the first row below the main periodic table in the lanthanide series, elements 57 to 71, plus scandium, number 21, and yttrium, number 39. Which share similar properties and are found in the same deposits as the lanthanides. They are transition metals with distinctive magnetic and fluorescent characteristics. Think of these elements not as bulk materials, but as metallurgical spices, used in tiny quantities to produce dramatic improvements in performance. Add neodymium to iron and boron and get the strongest permanent magnet known. Add yttrium to turbine alloys, and jet engines can tolerate extraordinary heat. Europium makes modern display screens possible. Terbium enables efficient electric motors. Samarium strengthens guidance systems and sensors. But, here's the rub, despite their name, rare earths are widespread. Significant deposits exist in the United States, Australia, Brazil, India, and elsewhere. And it goes on to talk about the challenge is not in the scarcity of these materials, it's in their processing. And that is certainly one way in which China has cornered the markets in recent years. It has been left essentially to China to take care of the details of all of this processing. And that is what is biting the U.S. Anglosphere side of the geopolitical world order in the butt right now, because suddenly, oh, maybe this is important. And all these export controls and other such things do have an effect when there is no infrastructure in place to process these materials, let alone actually secure them. So that is an aspect of what's happening right now. But as this article points out, it's actually quite a rare earths are not rare in and of themselves. They're actually quite widespread and found in a number of places. So it cannot be the explanation for the mad rush and scramble for Greenland right now. So what else could be going on here? See, a lot of this sounds like that sort of two-dimensional geopolitical chess that, James, you've talked about before. That's not what the real game is about. It's about the three-dimensional chess. And there are puppeteers over top the two-dimensional chessboard who are moving pieces around on both sides of the chessboard that the U.S.-China or U.S.-Russia or whatever rivalry it is painted as in the mainstream geopolitical press is not quite the full understanding of what's going on here. So what could be the third-dimensional understanding of what is happening here? Well, let's take a look at a curious little map. It is called Technate of America. And you can take it from a number of places. The Cornell Library has a particularly good one that you can download in super high quality, high res. And it does have a little explanation of what it is we are seeing here. This is Technate of America. And of course, we do see the United States of America. But really, we see, well, not just North America. We also see parts of Latin and South America. And oh, what's this over here? What? Let's zoom in on that. Oh, right. Greenland. Interesting. So what on earth does this map depict? Well, as this goes on to say, this map illustrates the American technate, a radical geopolitical proposal by based on pseudoscientific economics and authoritarian nationalist politics. As the Great Depression deepened in the early 1930s, Americans looked in desperation to a variety of radical social and political solutions. One of the most popular was technocracy, which offered a seemingly scientific explanation of America's ills, namely the disastrous inefficiency of the wage-price system, the very heart of capitalism. The technocrats proposed abandoning business and representative government as the driving forces of our economy and replacing them with massive social engineering centered on technicians, especially engineers, as the efficient, scientific, anti-capitalistic elite capable of reorienting the economic order around rational production and distribution. Theirs was a clarion call for technicians to plan and engineer the new order. The new world order? Well, at least to start with, the new technate order, starting with the technate of America. And as this goes on to point out, Greenland turns out to be one of the parts of this technate of America, the continental technate that was proposed by Scott. He says, along with these proposed steps, Scott wrote that the territory of the United States must be expanded in order to defend it properly. The new technate of America was to include all of Canada, Greenland, Central America, the Caribbean, and parts of Colombia, Venezuela, and the Guyanas. Defense bases were to be established around the perimeter as far afield as Attu, Pago Pago, the Galapagos, Georgetown, Guyana, Bermuda, St. John's, Newfoundland, and Cape Farewell, Greenland. In Scott's words, on the maps accompanying this issue is delineated the geographical territory required for the adequate defense and operation of this continental area. So you may have seen this map floating around in social media recently, and there's a reason for it. There is a very important political pedigree to this idea and to the fact that Greenland is part of the defense of North America. specifically the securing of its resources for the privileged few technocratic elitists who presume to steward over the entire economic order in the interests of us mere peons. Now, if you do not know about technocracy, boy, do I have some viewing for you to get caught up to speed. You could start, for example, with my handy dandy questions for Corbett on this very subject. What is technocracy? Where I go through the origins of this idea and its development by the charlatan Howard Scott, and how that became a guiding ideology for the elitists moving forward. Obviously, Technocracy Inc., although there is still a rump organization that exists, did not become the driving factor in the promotion of technocracy. No, it was then taken up by the Brzezinskis of the world, for example, and forwarded through the Trilateral Commission, etc., etc. There is a rich and important historical thread there that I invite you to start pulling on to unravel the tapestry of our current world order. And you could start with that questions for Corbett. You could continue with why big oil conquered the world, where I have a dedicated section talking about technocracy and how that explains this transition that we have been undergoing for some time now, the post-fossil fuel world. And why is big oil on board with this? Oh, because it is about technocracy and the securing of the natural resources of the world. And you can, of course, continue diving in with not only my interviews with Patrick Wood on his books about technocracy and his work on the subject, but then you can, of course, also read Patrick Wood's books themselves to come up to speed on what technocracy is and why it is an important, if not determinative, but certainly an important factor in what is happening on the global geopolitical chessboard right now. It is not about the dragon bear versus the U.S. Anglosphere, so much as it is about a guiding ideology that animates both sides of this two-pronged conflict, or every side, if you want to think of it as a multipolar world order. So how do we start situating Greenland and what is happening there in the context of this story of technocracy and the desire of a few to rule over the resources in order to ultimately control the global economy? Well, we don't have to go far afield to find the answer to that. We can go to a handy-dandy and very important research article from Global Research at globalresearch.ca. It was posted up late last month. It is by David Skripik, and it is Greenland, Donald Trump, Technocracy, and the Globalist New World Order. And this is a voluminous, very interesting and well-written article. I suggest you read it in its entirety, but let's just drill down on it. Who is David Skripik? As a pilot who frequently traveled to Greenland while serving in the Canadian Armed Forces, I can say with assurance that Greenland is already fully integrated into the American Empire's network of strategic possessions and has been since the early 1950s. And as he goes on to point out, yes, in his own, even his own personal experience, let alone his research, it is certainly the case that America already has a very dominant strategic foothold in Greenland. And so the idea that this is about some sort of we better secure Greenland before the Ruskies get to it rings untrue, shall we say. So why the sudden focus on Greenland? Well, David writes, aside from rich and largely untapped natural resources, huge, unproven and unexploited oil deposits, potentially 7.3 billion barrels, natural gas reserves estimated to be anywhere from 50 trillion to 150 trillion cubic feet, and extensive mineral deposits, there is, I believe, one other main reason for this sudden attention being paid to Greenland. Namely, Trump is being leaned on to annex Greenland by certain highly influential individuals who contributed handsomely to his second presidential election campaign. These men, namely Elon Musk, Howard Lutnick, Peter Thiel, and Sam Altman, are now in a position to steer the president in whatever direction they desire for the purpose of fulfilling their primary goal. They are chomping at the bit to form what is known as the North American Technate, the linchpin to a full-blown and ultimately worldwide technocracy. And he goes through some just the short bullet points of what is technocracy, where did it come from, etc. He highlights this 1940 map of the Technate of America, and then goes on to talk about the multi-pillar globalist New World Order. We've all heard about the multipolar world order that those valiant BRICS are spearheading right now and is going to be the savior from this American-led bad old world order. We're going to get the multipolar New World Order. Yay. Well, in contrast to that, David Skripik talks about the multi-pillar globalist New World Order, a globalist New World Order vision, in which five pillars hold up a square canopy. And that canopy represents the technocracy, the overarching ideology, which, of course, is the system itself. And each pillar of this globalist New World Order is supporting that canopy. So what is David's vision of this? How does it work? What does Greenland have to do with technocracy? These are good questions. So I asked them to David Skripik himself.
As your readers and listeners will know, whenever we're dealing with a geopolitical situation like this, there's always an economic dimension to this, to any situation, be it World War I, World War II, any conflict, and especially Greenland. We have to look at the economic dimension, then we get the full picture. So as we already discussed, okay, there's a military dimension. Now the economic dimension is, there's incredible sums of oil. Some estimates are 7.3 billion barrels of oil, possible reserves in Greenland. There's 50, depending on estimates, 50 to 150 trillion cubic feet of natural gas that is yet to be explored in Greenland. The mining resources, the rare earth minerals, as they call them, especially in the southern point of Greenland, there's a massive mine called Tanbreez in the southern tip of Greenland. That's where vast sums of zirconium, cryolite, tantalum, terium. These are all important minerals for if you would like to have a cell phone, if you want to make a computer like the device we're speaking through right now, if you would like to manufacture F-35 fighter aircraft, these are key mineral deposits, which Greenland has in abundance. So that is my, I wish to posit that is my belief that that's what they're really going after. Now, the rhetoric that we're hearing from Washington, from Donald Trump's regime, is just rhetoric. It's a way to put maybe pressure on the Danish government to say, well, look, why don't we just get to the table and let's make a business arrangement? Because we already have our military bases there. But we need mining rights to get at these incredible resources, not to mention iron ore. I didn't mention iron ore as well. Greenland holds in vast amounts of ore. So the benefits are clearly there. So maybe this is just a tactic that the Trump regime is using to pressure the Danish government to let's sit down at the table and let's come to an agreement, because there is a movement in Greenland that is seeking independence, to move away from the Kingdom of Denmark, right? Greenland is a part of the Kingdom of Denmark. So that will not bode well for Uncle Sam and the American Empire. So that's what I think it's really going to the crux of the matter here.
I completely concur with that assessment. And I think people fail to realize the importance of things like rare earths in this new scramble of neo-colonization, whatever is happening in the Arctic right now. There's a lot of different factors that make Greenland actually a strategic location. But beyond that, we don't even have to think about the current struggles or whatever may be taking place on the geopolitical chessboard between US and China and some of these other players. So we could travel back to the past. And I note that in your recently published Global Research article, you reproduce the 1940 map of the Technate of America, which, of course, comes from our old friend Howard Scott, the charlatan behind Technocracy, Inc. Tell people about this map and what it shows about where we are heading as America starts to consolidate North America into a single security unit.
Yes, that's right. So we have the, like we discussed, the military aspect, the economic aspect. Now, what better way to get this economic aspect than to bring it into the North American technate as envisioned by the technocracy movement? In a nutshell, as your listeners will know, technocracy is the distribution, organization, and control of all of the world's resources for the benefit of a very few. And since we're discussing in our economic aspect resources, what better way to try to get all of Greenland's goodies into the North American technate? And that holds true as well. What we're seeing events in Venezuela. Venezuela has vast amounts of oil resources that would fit very well into the technate. So we are already, Venezuela's coming into the orbit. Greenland is going to be next in the orbit. Cuba doesn't obviously have much to offer in terms of resources, but it does have sugar and other natural resources on the land, which also will be incorporated. Sadly, that will be the situation. I think sometime in this year, Cuba will collapse and will be absorbed by the Pax Americana, by the American Empire. But overall, when we look at the technate, the 1940 technate of North America, that fits perfectly. Greenland, you can clearly see, is in that map. So is Cuba. So is Puerto Rico and another Dominican Republic. The Latin America is in there, and the northern tip of South America. And that's what I believe is the grand picture. That's all being formed. Yes, Russia has a presence in the Arctic, and clearly because of where they are geographically located. But will Russia, and Russia knows exactly that the American military presence is there in Greenland. So they're not going to all of a sudden start a war for that. But that's the two-dimensional aspect. Three-dimensional chess, it's a whole different ballgame. They're all in on it. They're all on the same scheme, and they all want these prizes.
This is exactly right. And this is something that sometimes gets lost in the geopolitical analysis. Yes, there is a 2D chessboard. There are players who genuinely are seeing the game that way, but there is the 3D chessboard. And once we start to understand the technocracy ideology that is guiding not just the United States and Washington, but basically every of the major players on this table, we start to see a very different idea of what this struggle or presumed struggle for dominance is really about. Yes, there is technocracy, which is about securing resources so that they can then be stewarded over and doled out by the wonderful, loving technocrats to the population, or at least that's what they want you to believe. But really, it is about consolidation of resources within geographical domains that were mapped out the better part of a century ago and are literally there, sitting there on the map. And we are seeing that come to fruition. So in that regard, it poses a very different view of the world than the one posed by certain geopolitical analysts who talk about the multipolar world and we're moving into this, you know, BRICS versus the NATO type of situation. As opposed to that, you propose something called the multi-pillar globalist New World Order. Can you explain what that is?
Yeah, because I one time was a true believer in the multipolar aspect until the scandemic of 2020. Once the scandemic started to roll out, I started to realize, wait a second, why is every single government marching, as the Rockefellers would say, in lockstep, implementing exactly the same dystopian protocols, one country after another, after another, after another, including China. Beijing is fully in on it, including Russia. Moscow is in on it. Every South Africa, all of Europe, Mexico, Latin America. So that's when I started to realize, wait a second. That to me, the scandemic was kind of a litmus test to see, okay, who's on board with this globalist agenda, who's not. Clearly, they were all on board. So that's when I came up with an idea or tried to explain it to somebody. Because they were always asking, okay, David, but what is the deep state? Is the deep state the Rockefeller Syndicate? Is it the City of London? No, is it the Pentagon? No, is it the World Economic Forum or the Council on Foreign Relations? I said, well, it's basically all of the above. They're all working together to hold up, as I would call it, the globalist new one world government canopy. So all these nation states are, as I described them, pillars. You have five important groups that are supporting this pillar of the globalist one world agenda. That's the way I try to explain to people so they can envision a structure that's holding up this canopy of globalism. And so you have in the center, you have with Pax Americana, the American Empire, which is seated in the center holding up this canopy, that has all of these globalist organizations emanating from it. You have the UN, which is donated on Rockefeller land. You have the World Economic Forum, even though I know it's based in Davos, Switzerland, but it's tied to the UN, which is based in New York City, and all of its offshoot organizations. And of course, then you have the Council on Foreign Relations, which forms a center pillar, which is very important. to dole out the policies of whatever neocon think tanks are trying to think about, and all these other organizations. So that's in the center pillar. And of course, you have the American military industrial complex, which is very important, because should a nation state decide, well, no, we're not going to play by this game anymore, we want to chart our own sovereign course, that's when the American military is useful. That's when they will then bring Venezuela or whatever country, Libya, under the heels of the, again, bring it into the canopy of the one world government. Then, of course, we have in one other corner, so that's in the center. We have in another corner, we have the United Kingdom with the Commonwealth of Nations. As we could see during the scandemic, their protocols were absolutely vicious, the way they rolled out everything. And that emanated, all started in Mother England, and then went all throughout the Commonwealth, including Canada, Australia, New Zealand, etc. So that was formulated from that corner. So, and then in another corner, we have the European Parliament, which is modeled, the system of the European Parliament is modeled after the Soviet system, with no democratic oversight. Members are appointed. They're not elected by anyone in the European Commission. Most of them are bankers. So it's great to roll out any dystopian nightmare. And of course, the five key objectives for this to work is, of course, digital biometric IDs, thought crime laws. In Canada, were labeled as hot hate crime laws, but this is the same meaning. So thought crime, carbon credit system, social credit system, and of course, digital central bank currencies. So some nations have implemented all five of those objectives to create the technate, the perfect technocracy technate. For example, China, which is another pillar, and its influence or sphere of nations that it controls. For example, right now as we speak, China is trying to help Vietnam to develop a central bank digital currency for Vietnam. So that's how it's starting. So they're in charge of that sphere. So China is now already a full technique. All five objectives have been met. And then in another corner, we have Russia under Vladimir Putin. They're rolling out everything as fast as possible as well. Central bank digital currency, it's all being rolled out. They don't have a real social credit system yet or carbon credit system, but I'm sure they're working on that. They don't have an actual hate crime in the books or thought crime laws in the books, but they don't need that, because if you do criticize how Moscow is conducting the special military operation in Ukraine, well, the FSB will be knocking at your door. So indirectly, it's already been constructed. And then, so that I believe I've covered all there, the EU, China, UK, and European Union. So those are the five pillars that are supporting this one world globalist government. But the pillars need a solid foundation to stand on. None of what I've just described for the past 10 minutes would be possible if it was not for the financial monetary system of the world. That's all the central banks, the Bank of International Settlements, the Bank of England, the United States Federal Reserve, et cetera, and all of their banking institutions. Without the help of the central banking establishment, none of this would be possible. If you pull the BIS out of the equation, all the banks, all the money, the entire structure would collapse in a matter of days. But that's, unfortunately, no, that's where we are right now.
Once again, that is David Skripik, the research associate at the Center for Research on Globalization at globalresearch.ca. And I will once again recommend that interested parties read his article, Greenland, Donald Trump, Technocracy, and the Globalist New World Order, for more of the bones of what we fleshed out there. But I think you get the point. This multipolar global world order that is much ballyhooed in certain geopolitical circles is better described as a multi-pillar globalist world order that is coming into view, that is being propped up by all of the parties playing their part in this gigantic charade. And that is not to say, of course, that there is no two-dimensional aspect to what is happening here, that there is no rivalry or jockeying of position between the various factions within this multi-pillar globalist world order. Surely there is, and many of the people involved in the nation-state apparatus of these various pillars of the globalist world order, no doubt do believe themselves to be virtuous nationalist warriors fighting for their particular nation state. But as usual, we have to keep in mind that the people at the very top of the power pyramid do not identify with the nation state structure that they dangle out before us as the one totalizing answer to this puzzle of what is happening on the geopolitical chessboard. But having said that, this is an hypothesis. And like any hypothesis, it is open to testing, evaluation, and reinterpretation as need be, as different data come along to either bolster or to go against that hypothesis. So let's see if we can test this with what is happening in the real world right now. Is there a multipolar genuine struggle for dominance going on between distinct areas of the geopolitical circus? Is there a U.S. Anglosphere order that's competing against a BRICS multipolar order led by Russia and China? Or is there some degree of collaboration and a broader agenda to implement technocracy? How can we possibly adjudicate this question? Well, why don't we look back again at that map of the technate of America, as proposed by Howard Scott back in 1940, and how that maps onto, or fails to map onto, the current geopolitical reality of the U.S. national security doctrine and what is actually taking place on the grand chessboard. And let's see if there's some correlation there that might point to the fact that this is a deeper explanation of what is going on, not just in Greenland, but in other points around the world. So let's turn to an observation that was made on a recent edition of the Cognitive Dissidence podcast by Hrvoje Morić of Geopolitics and Empire, who points out that, yes, in fact, when you map the U.S.'s current geopolitical ambitions onto this technate of America map from Howard Scott, it points out exactly what we see taking place right now.
Technically, Greenland is tectonically part of the technate, because according to NASA,
yes,
Greenland is part of the North American tectonic plate, which I find funny. And then just my trends again, this is a little peek from my paid subscriber material, but you notice the trend, like the given the work that we've done on CD the past months, the trend continues of the formation of the technate, when we talk about Venezuela and all that, in Mexico. So I have a Mexican friend of mine. He works somehow in related to law, and he believes that the Mexican government is going to do whatever Washington wants. And we're seeing that so far. He doesn't think we're going to see like a war with Mexico. And the most recent examples, you had FBI apparently acting on Mexican territory, which is against Mexican law. And Scheinbaum says, oh, la, 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 I don't know what's going on. It didn't happen. Because there was this Canadian, he was a former Canadian athlete. You know that story, Ryan something?
Yeah.
A Canadian athlete who was running drugs in Mexico. So the FBI breaking Mexican sovereignty, Scheinbaum doesn't care. Then you have Scheinbaum being forced to cut off oil to Cuba, doing whatever Washington wants. Then the cartel transfers. They've done like 100 cartel members, shipped them off to America. Apparently those are illegal according to Mexican law.
Yeah, what was that about? I couldn't...
The U.S. says we want these cartel guys and Mexico just sends them. And apparently that is against Mexican law. And so they're doing whatever the empire wants. And then Colombia, which this was crazy. I just saw this story. Gustavo Petro is going to meet with Trump a few days before that. Colombia is doing narco cleanup. They just got like half a dozen Colombian narco cocaine cartel members. So it's like, you said, okay, Colombia is doing whatever Washington wants. Costa Rica just got a new kind of like MAGA-ish technocratic right-wing president. There you go. Costa Rica's falling into line. The Panama Canal ports, right? They just ruled against the Chinese, the Hong Kong company. That's falling into line. Venezuela is privatizing its oil sector now. That's falling into line. And then see, here's a story from CNN, U.S. planning CIA foothold in post-Maduro Venezuela. So then when you talk about Greenland, it's just kind of like, it's all coming together.
Once again, that is Hrvoje Morić of Geopolitics and Empire.com speaking on a recent edition of the Cognitive Dissidents podcast. So I will throw that link in the show notes along with absolutely everything else discussed and or shown here on today's podcast at CorbettReport.com/Greenland. So you can start going into in greater detail the specific items in today's podcast. But having said that, I hope people understand what is being presented here. There is a Cold War 2.0 that is taking place and taking shape right now. We are seeing the outlines of a grand geoeconomic / geostrategic / geopolitical struggle that is manifesting in a number of ways in various places, including the Northern Corridor, and for a number of reasons, including the control of resources. But this is not being done in the service of a two-dimensional geopolitical agenda in which nation states are competing one against each other for national self-interest. This is part of a much, much broader idea, an agenda that is being shaped by an ideology, the guiding ideology of technocracy. And that is being implemented in country after country all around the world, including in Russia, including in China, including in the United States and the UK and Japan and Taiwan and Scotland and everywhere else on the geopolitical chessboard. Because, as I have had cause to point out many times before and will no doubt many times again in the future, this is a struggle of the ruling oligarchs against you and me and everybody else. This is not about nation states and national interests. This is about a ruling oligarchy that is consolidating their control over the geopolitical chessboard and trying to recruit us to be pawns in their two-dimensional fights. Yes, there is jockeying for position that goes on within this multi-pillar globalist world order, but it is not a straightforward two-dimensional chess match as is presented in the mainstream propaganda establishment media. Anyway, there's plenty of food for thought in today's episode and much, much more to explore in the various links that I will be linking up at CorbettReport.com/Greenland. So I invite you to explore that information on your own time, and please do report back to headquarters with other pieces of this geopolitical puzzle that you find interesting. And as always, Corbett Report members are invited to log on to CorbettReport.com and leave your comments in the comments for today's podcast. I'm looking forward to seeing your feedback on this and exploring this subject in much greater detail in the future. But that's going to do it for today. I am James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, thanking you for investing your time in today's exploration.
The deep state. False flags. 9/11 truth. The Federal Reserve. Secret wars and hidden histories. Fake news. Medical martial law. Ceaseless propaganda. James Corbett. Reportage. Essays on the New World Order. Available where books are sold. Until they're not.
ReportageBook.com.
Iceland.